Tiny Talk, Episode 5. In this episode, Why Mush Won't Die, interview with Sally of ElectricSoup.net, and a visit to 8-Bit Mush. Welcome to Tiny Talk, a podcast about mushes and other text-based virtual worlds. I'm your host, Javelin, and I wanted to start by talking about a perennial discussion among mush designers that centers on the future of mush. Presentations at the more or less annual Innovations in Text-Based Gaming conference by Vexon and Shade in 2000 and 2002, respectively, focused on the role of text games as graphical MUDs were just coming onto the scene in a big way. Neal Stephenson, in his 1992 cyberpunk novel Snow Crash, posited a visually immersive metaverse, but pointed out that what made the Black Sun nightclub in that book there so popular was the algorithms for facial expressions. Shade made a similar point in the presentation in 2002. I'll quote, "In a graphical game, emotes frankly look stupid, and you can never do a sequence of actions that are fluid, that touch the imagination and creativity." Well, back then, most graphical worlds were pretty clearly hack-and-slash games. Now we have places like Second Life, where users can design their own animations, and there's a lot of active work going on in the area of facial expressions. It's still not as easy, for me at least, as the written word, but the payoff is access to the parts of the brain that are specialized for the visual recognition of faces and facial emotion. In relative terms, right, graphical games have a lot more players than textual games do. But in absolute terms, text-based gaming doesn't appear to me to be on a decline. Skodos Tech, for example, seems alive and well and even making money from people who are willing to pay to play for text-based gaming. Maybe we'll see if we can get someone from over there on the show one of these days. So what is it that is special about text-based gaming? Why do those of us who like it like it? At the core, I think there are two things that really drive our niche, at least for me. The first is love of words, and the second is closeness of community. As Vexon said in his presentation, he said, MUDs are to graphical games like books are to television, and that's a pretty common analogy. Nowadays, we might say as blogs are to YouTube or something like that. And there's something to that for many of us. I would rather read a book than watch TV, and unless the illustrations are integral to the story, like in a graphic novel, I'd rather not be forced to have the characters or settings visually interpreted for me. I like language, and I like to read good writing, and, you know, sure, most mushers are not professional writers, but I think that many mush role players have experienced a moment when they read a line off the screen or even from a log and they shiver with the emotional resonance. It can be really powerful. Closeness of community is a natural outgrowth of living in a niche that's on the margins of popular entertainment. It's certainly not unique to mushing, but I think it contributes to what we like about it. People who keep playing mushes find each other, and their shared enjoyment with what is a relatively unpopular medium provides a common culture and maybe even some geek cachet. A recent presentation by Bill McKenty, who was a guest on this podcast in episode 3, was advertised in part by the statement, "I do not think standard pose-based roleplay has a bright future." And as part of that presentation, a collection of suggestions for how to grow text-based gaming was put forward, and I'll have a link to those in the show notes. Some of those suggestions focused on increasing visibility of mushing to new players, but with the recognition that what we're talking about here is growing a niche, not taking over the market. Text-based gaming is not going to be for everyone, and we shouldn't try to make it for everyone. Many of the other suggestions focused on orienting mush players to the community nature of our activities and encouraging active engagement with that larger community. That is, realizing that while you may enjoy playing, you know, whatever it is, mush, there is a greater mush community. There are other people playing other mushes who are sharing in your enjoyment of text-based gaming, and who thus provide opportunities for everyone to develop the hobby. That's why Mush won't die.
Misty Turner, known in the Mush world as Sally, maintains the electricsoup.net website, a Mush-oriented community website with news, articles, and discussion forums. Misty started out as a MUD player back in 1992, and then moved on to role-playing Mushes, where she played Sha'al Mayan and Captain Sheridan for about 8 years at the original Babylon 5 Mush, and has also been involved in several Star Wars Mushes. We spoke by phone. So what was your goal when you set up the Electric Soup website?
Well, I actually set it up back in December of 2000, so it'll celebrate its 7th anniversary this year. And when I did so, there really was no other sites of its type. I'm not quite sure if OGR was up at that time. I know Mush was, and I actually visited that site quite a bit back in the day. I had a different username than I do now, but I did do some building there, and I thought that it was a great concept. However, so many things were moving towards more of a message board based discussion forum, and I thought it'd be nice to see what other mushers had to share about their own experiences and how they did things on their games. I didn't see a lot of cross-platform community sharing that wasn't related to Penmush, which at the time was the only one I was really familiar with myself. So I decided I had some web space. I'd use it.
Well, and sort of this cross-platform community sharing is becoming a big theme of this podcast, I think. And you can really see it when you're on the site. There aren't that many places that have such active forums. What's the software that's behind the website?
Well, currently I run it on Drupal. And it's I like it a lot better. Before, I had a homegrown HTML-based, very manual site that I stole the format from. I believe it was from one of the iterations of The Onion. I stole completely and just changed the colors and fiddled around with the tables until I liked it. But that was very clunky, and we had a couple of database issues with our forums at that time, and I decided that I needed something that was more friendly. People would submit articles. I'd lose them in my email from just sheer volume, and it was very difficult to print them. So when we wanted to go with a CMS, a content management system. So Drupal at the time was the best one out there, in my opinion, and it may still be. But we're actually currently exploring other options on MPUG, which is Mush Park's kind of test bed site hangout admin. It's kind of like Mush for the everyone. I would call it a companion site to Mush, and we talk a lot about there. We have two channels there: one a development channel and one an Electric Soup channel. And we have a lot of productive discussions there about where we should go and what we should do. And of course, everyone has an opinion. So, but again, it's a hobby, so I try to commit as much time to it as I can. But right now, we're kind of stalled on where we're going to go next. We do know it's still going to it's going to stay a content management kind of hierarchy, but we don't know. The forums, as I hear quite a bit, are the weakest part of our site, even though they are active.
So, you know, I normally think of you as the face of the site, if you will, but I know there are other people who are involved in running it. Who else are you working with on that?
Well, Nails is probably, I joke that he's my muse. He's the one who keeps me on track, and I have a little bit of an attention issue, as noted by the fact that on my desk, like I mentioned previously, I have three computers and my knitting, which I do in between things.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, so I have a lot of stimuli. I actually have my sewing table right behind me as well, because I do a lot of costuming, and sometimes I'll be sewing, mushing, and playing another game pretty much all at the same time. So if it wasn't for Nails, I probably I don't want to say the site would be in a state of disrepair, but it definitely, he's the one who usually reminds me to do my monthly editorial and to change the poll, which I didn't do this month, but I will for June. So hopefully, Nails is in Paris right now, so I'm going to have to self-motivate this month. It's going to be a little hard, but I'll have to do it. Mark is another contributor to the site. Gray, Brazil. I get a lot of support. You as well. I mean, you submit a great amount of articles. Faraday. I have the site has a lot of regulars, and they're all always willing to step up and contribute and help out in a number of ways. And really, I mean, the whole slogan for you, basically, you know, for you by you, which doesn't really appear on the new site, but was really a kind of an over. No, there it is. I thought I brought it over from the old site. It's really true. The site is nothing without the people who contribute to it. I don't have the time or the energy to write the myriad of articles we get. I don't even have the expertise in a lot of the cases. And I think it's fantastic that the community is willing to step up and contribute as much as they have. And it's really built a great repository of information that I know I personally have found useful as an active, you know, wizard on a game and as a player.
Have you had any sort of favorite moments on the site?
You know, back in the day, we used to the very first iteration of the message board was great. It was very lively, and those were some great moments. But I think the one that stands out, and Adam from Fearon will be very happy I'm mentioning this. None of my reviewers at the time, I used to have a team of reviewers when we first started out, wanted to review Fearon, so I said I would do it. My plan was to only go on for a month and write a review, and I did that, but I ended up playing probably for about 6 years. Just from doing that one review, I met the couple. I actually went to their wedding this weekend, and most of the visitors were people I met on that game that were at the wedding, of the 13 people that were there. So that was probably the greatest moment, in that I mistakenly stumbled onto a community of people who happened to be running a great game and were local.
Well, that's terrific.
Yeah, there's lots of great moments. Some of the great moments are drama, but those are more funny than anything. We don't have a lot of drama, but when we do, it's usually pretty large and humorous.
I think that's typical of a lot of active messaged sites, you know.
Yeah, I would agree.
So your kind of history in the Mud World really resonates with me, because like me, I see you started out on MUDs, mm-hmm. Back in the day, as it were, and then moved on to role playing Mushes. And right now, you are the head wizard at Star Wars Legacies.
No, I'm actually one of the senior wizards, and it's Star Wars Galaxies. No, I'm sorry, not Galaxies. That's a different game. It's Star Wars Sagas.
Star Wars Sagas, okay.
And we're currently on a hiatus because we're just two of the admins actually were the head admins were the ones whose wedding I was at this weekend. And a lot of us were there, and we got to a point where the game just, as many games do, real life steps in and just drags everybody in their own separate direction, and there's just not enough TLC for the game. Rather than let it flounder, we really let people know, hey, you know what, we're going on hiatus right now, we're going to let you keep your characters, we're going to let you know when we're back. So that's the status we're in right now. I mean, even though I am still staff on that game and I'm an honorary wizard on Fearon, not really actively admitting somewhere, and that's pretty much a first for me in the past, you know, number of years.
Well, condolences or congratulations, I guess, right?
Yeah, it kind of goes both ways with that, doesn't it?
So that shouldn't be taken as saying that, for example, you believe that mushing is dead, and
absolutely not. I think that even though that there is a lot of it is always the hot button discussion whenever it gets brought up on the site, I think that mushing could use a little bit of thinking shift in terms of how we recruit new players. I think that we depend on our current players to word of mouth people in, or to just migrate from game to game. I think that we don't see enough advertisements outside of the mushing. Like, yeah, I can advertise on Mud Connector, but it's still the same group of people for the most part. We don't advertise in gaming magazines. We don't advertise in a lot of different places and a lot of different websites where I think that we could get a new group of people that would breathe perhaps more life into the genre. I don't think that Mush is dead. I think that Mush is old. And as anything aging, sometimes you need to take a hard look at what you're doing and maybe revamp it a little bit. But I think by and large, it's still definitely a strong medium. You look at games like, again, Firin with 100, 150 user logins. There's a Serenity Mush, I believe it's actually called Serenity Mush, that has 122 logins almost consistently or more consistently when I log in. And that to me doesn't sound like a dying genre.
All right, so now to the really important question, which is, what are you knitting?
Well, currently on my desk, I have a sock. It is the pair of one I've already done. I should probably finish it. It's probably only inches away from completion, but it's one of those things that once you put it down, you kind of stop.
Yeah, socks are the bane of my existence.
I love socks. I knit on ones.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks I'm insane. But I also have a cubby, a big, like, six... container cubby with just yarn. It's like my husband calls it Misty's Yarn Shop because I'm never going to knit anything with it, he says. But I will someday.
Well, I want to thank you for talking with me. Is there anything else that you'd like to sort of say out to the listeners?
Well, I hope all of you either come visit Electric Soup again or for the first time. We are always happy to welcome not only new members in terms of readers, but if you want to contribute in any of our categories, have suggestions or changes for the site that you'd like to see, we're very receptive to that, and there's plenty of ways to get that to us. So we look forward to seeing you soon.
Well, we'll absolutely have a link in the show notes for the show.
Great.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
For this episode's visit to a mush, I visited 8-Bit Mush at 8bit.memoryleak.org/4201. As usual in these visits, I'm going to focus on the unique and innovative, and there's a lot to say, so I'm going to make this a two-parter. For this part, I'm going to take a look at the 8-bit economy. It's not too unusual for a role-playing mush to have an in-character economy. What you've got with 8-bit, though, is a social mush that's successfully implemented a working economy based in standard mush coins. Let's take a look at what it takes to make this work. First, you need a reason to want money. So many people come to 8-bit because they want to build fun objects and areas, and that takes money, so that's one reason. Many of the cool toys that people build are for sale in the game, and that's another reason to want money. Money is also prestige for some players, and 8-bit's website supports that by providing a list of the richest characters. Finally, there's a system of hunger and thirst that acts as an economic sink. Next, you need some scarcity. If everyone gets infinite money or gives everything away, there's no real economy. So this means limiting the money supply, and 8-bit does that by being fairly strict about daily player paychecks. You get them, but they're not large. In addition, it imposes a periodic tax on inactive players that helps balance this out. So, of course, you need some ways to make money, and here 8-bit really scores. Their economy motivates a variety of activities and styles of play. So before I give examples, let me make an allusion here to Richard Bartle's well-known classification of mud players as killers, achievers, explorers, and socializers. Actually, it's much more nuanced than that now, but the simple classification will serve to illustrate what I mean. Bartle talks about several stable balances of different types of players, and 8-bit's economy provides rewards to each type. So one way to earn money is by finding coins that are scattered throughout the landscape, and this encourages exploring and explorers. Another way is to solve puzzles and quests that provide rewards, and that encourages achievers. Yet another way is to build areas that players like, or to teach classes, or to publish in the Mush newspaper, which pays based on circulation, which is really interesting, and that encourages socializers. Finally, different versions of the killer class are encouraged through a working system of companies and a stock market, as well as options for players to actually become rogues or criminals. In short, the 8-bit economy is deep and well-balanced, and check it out. So normally I would have news and notes here, but there are no news or notes this week. So instead, you get a plea to send me some news and notes. Tell me what your mush is doing, give me some ideas for future shows, ask questions, all that stuff. The show's voicemail phone number has changed. It's now 206-333-1542. And of course, you can always email or post comments to the show notes online. And that's it for episode 5 of Tiny Talk. Music for this episode comes from Le Goutte au Nez from the Overture Facile album and Jamendo.com. If you're downloading this directly from the web, you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Tiny Talk is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license, so you're welcome to share it as is, just don't sell it. Show notes for Tiny Talk are at community.penmush.org. If you have comments, mushing questions you'd like answered, or suggestions for future shows, send email to tinytalk@javelin.penmush.org or leave a voicemail at 206-333-1542. Until next time, keep the text flowing.